What's your story? I mean, the story of your life. How do you tell it? How do you describe the what's and the how's and the why's of your journey on this big blue marble? Everybody has their own stories. A couple of weeks ago, I encouraged you to explore your family history as a way to go deeper, especially the history of migration to this country, just as a way to go deeper into your own path of self-discovery. And today, I'm inviting us to reflect upon our own life as a journey and the stories, either the stories we tell about ourselves, or in my case, I'll be sharing some stories that inform my life, to just reflect upon that and how it actually does move you forward or keep you back in life. In Hindu theology, the lifespan is divided into four stages. There is the brahmacharya. It's a student life. That's a time for acquiring knowledge and learning to live according to the social mores and the moral code of the space, your context. Then there's the Greek, and excuse me for any of you who might know how to pronounce these better, I'll do the best I can. The grihasthya. It's the household life. That is the time for partnering, bringing up a family, educating children, maintaining a household. It's kind of the building time of life. And then there's a vanaprastha, retired life. It is when one hands over the responsibilities of the household to the next generation and begins to transition from the emphasis on wealth and security to security towards a sense of spiritual liberation. And finally, there is a sannyasa, or the renounced life. It's a time of detachment from the material world, with more and more focus on the spiritual life. And according to Hindu thought, anyone can move right to this stage from the first stage, the brahmacharya. I would say the rise of capitalism has greatly decreased that possibility. So these four stages, the student life, the householder life, the retired life, and finally a life where we're beginning to renounce this material world and perhaps prepare for whatever is next. Now, while these are linearly represented and a bit too squared for my squiggly mind, the framework helps me put my own life in context. I am a householder with two full-time working parents, me and my husband, and we're in the building up stage of life. It's a stage of fullness, to be sure. But lately, however, anchored within this stage of the householder, I have been thinking also about my life as seasons. It helps me remember that although life does have a progression through time, there's also a cyclical aspect to it. And everything comes and goes in cycles along varying lengths of time. The image that comes to mind for me is the image of DNA. There's a bunch of squiggles anchored around a straight trajectory. And with each season, there are different urgencies. There are different priorities. Different joys and different sorrows come with different seasons. There is some letting go and some picking up. Events, anniversaries, and even nature's seasons themselves bring us back to past times to revisit and then reflect upon how our life's journey has moved forward, the terrain we've traveled since the last time this came around. In his poem, Circle of Our Lives, Wendell Berry wrote, "Within the circles of our lives, we dance the circles of the years, the circles of the seasons within the circles of the years, the cycles of the moon within the circles of the seasons, the circles of our reasons within the cycles of the moon, Again, again, we come and go, changed, changing. Hands join, unjoin in love and fear, grief and joy. The circles turn, each giving into each, into all. So for my life, that feels very rich as I feel and see the circles, even on this linear trajectory called middle age. And I find myself talking about this time, about the fellowship season. I'm feeling like we're in a different kind of season, building this, with this building project. It's a legacy season. It's a season that we imagine, well, we're doing something for 50 years out, at least. So much of our focus is on the new building. And some things have been had to be put on hold and let go of as we take on this bigger project for this season. But it is a season. And our core trajectory of bringing love and reason to life and building a just and compassionate world remains the same. There's stories I've told myself in each season, each stage of my life. In some of my own stories, I'm the hero. In some, I'm just the witness. And in some, I'm the victim. Your life probably has some of those same stories in it too. Come on, fess up. But there's also stories, external stories, fables really, that I have come to incorporate that feel so important to me that they're sort of a part of my story at this point. They give me a sense of purpose and a sense of direction. I'm now living with two key stories, both of which I'm sure some of you have heard me share before, as they are such anchoring stories with me, for me. The first is the parrot story. And I first came upon this story when I was in search 12 years ago and looking for a congregation. And it's been told a few times in the congregation. It actually became an anchor story for our camp a few years ago. It's a Buddhist story. And it goes like this. It's about the brave little parrot. There once was a parrot. The Buddha came down, actually, as a parrot many, many years ago and was living in this beautiful, lush forest. And within this forest, the Buddha was just loving, circulating with the animals and flying high up the pine, around the pine trees, and watching the little river go through the story and through the forest. And then one evening, there was a huge thunderstorm. And with that thunderstorm, there was a clap of lightning that hit a tree, and all of a sudden, the forest was on fire. The Buddha cared deeply about all the animals, about the whole forest. And wondering what to do, the little Buddha parrot dove into the river, grabbed as much water as it could in its little wings, and went and shook it out on the fire. And basically nothing happened. But the Buddha kept doing that. The Buddha parrot kept going down and putting all its feathers in and just saying, I must do something. I have to do something about this. I can't just sit and let this fire rage. Now, up above the parrot, in the realm of the gods, were what were called then the devas. They might have been even been divas. They sat looking aloof down at the Buddha, the Buddha parrot, and saying, oh, please, can't that parrot see that there's nothing they can do to save this? So one of them came down as an eagle and said, parrot, save yourself. Get out of there and save yourself. And the parrot looked up and said, that is not helpful at all. Go about your way. And still went down into the river and grabbed the water and shook it out onto that raging fire. Now that eagle that saw that happening, saw how committed the parrot was to trying to do anything to make a difference, was moved to tears. And those tears came down and they splashed on the Buddha parrot's wings and they cried all the way down into the forest, and the fire went out and the forest regenerated And the parrot knew that its work was not for naught. Now, I love that story. Part of the reason I love that story is I can see myself in each of those characters. And it's not always pretty, actually. I can see myself in the frenetic parrot, almost panicked, trying to save the world. And I can see myself in those moments when I get cynical and want to just rise above or look away. But the most important way, the part that speaks to me most, is that it was when one being was moved to tears that the transformation happened. And so part of my calling is to keep my heart open enough so that over and over and over again, I can be moved to tears and maybe be an inkling of a catalyst that can be part of transforming this world. Now that is super hard work. But for me, that's the act of courageous love that's needed in our world right now. I have a second story that I mentioned. I want to tell you that one too, because I think somewhere they're related, maybe. This second story I've heard from a number of different traditions, but it goes something like this. This is the version I've heard. There were some Brits, and they were going out on a walkabout with the Aboriginals in Australia. On the first day, they set out. Everybody had their walking sticks, their backpacks. They traveled a few miles. They enjoyed the landscapes. And then they sat down, and they set up camp. They arose, and the next day set out with their Aboriginal guides out further into the outback, loving the journey, loving the terrain, set camp, went to sleep, got up. The Brits began to break camp, and the Aboriginals just sat there. And the Brits were kind of first wondering what was going on as they were kind of putting their stuff together, and the Aboriginals were just sitting there. And finally, in a little bit of impatience, they said, "Come on, it's time to go, the sun is up." And the Aboriginal said, "Well, we're not going anywhere today. We're waiting for our souls to catch up." And that thought to me about providing space for your soul to catch up is so deeply meaningful. Because I think we're living in a world where we barely have a nanosecond to give time for our souls to catch up. And I think living that way is not only damaging to us if we were slow enough to feel that, to be moved to tears by it, but it's damaging to the whole darn thing, the whole world. Because if we can't let our souls catch up, if we are moving from thing to thing to thing, distracted by our friend in Connecticut who just had the best latte of their life and posted it for you to know, or so deeply challenged by one thing after another in the pain of this world without taking the time to process it, we are in a cycle that is so difficult that I don't think our body spirits can tolerate anymore. So that time for your soul to catch up feels vital for me. Vital for me. I want to ask you what you do in your lives to help your souls catch up. When you go on vacation, do you really unplug or are you still? I feel like it's becoming such a distraction that we're losing that sense of our whole body interconnection, body, mind, and spirit. And in the midst of all the difficulties of the world, we can become like that parrot and just keep going and going and going and going. But ultimately, we do have to get above it enough to slow down, to feel it deeply enough that we can see what's really needed. So, where am I? I'm on a journey. Thank you. Who said that? That was awesome. I'm on a journey. So, this is segueing into the fact that I'm actually taking 5 weeks off to have my soul catch up. So that's where this is going. So in part of this, I actually feel a little bit of discomfort that my profession and a few other professions make that just a regular part. They understand that that's required for spiritual leadership. But we're all spiritual beings. And so I have some discomfort in the privilege I carry in that capacity. And I have a tremendous amount of gratitude for this congregation that has always been so gracious about that time. And I would hope that we could live in a world where that gets expanded to other people, and that when it can't, and when I'm not able to take this sabbatical time, I and you find other ways, smaller ways, to just allow ourselves to sink in and feel not only the challenge of the world, but also the joy. Because when we're going so fast, we miss that too. I haven't had a chance to look at the crocuses that are popping up. And that is restoring and renewing for us. So I will be completely unplugging for these 5 weeks. I have a week of vacation because I know, and then 4 weeks of sabbatical, because I know I can't compartmentalize my life enough without fully putting the off switch on for some of them. And I'm grateful to AJ, who's back there and will be up here in a moment, that he will get to assume the ministerial leadership during this time. And I ask you, beloved congregation, to also take your spiritual journey seriously. Take the needs of your soul seriously. Slow down enough to let your own heart speak, to let your own life speak, to listen to what is happening within you in these times of both joy and challenge. That is my invitation, my hope, that there'll be a little bit more space that you can carve out for your own souls. So you too can allow whatever it is that needs to flow from you to do that, to heal yourself and our world. Blessed be.